welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Okay, hello, welcome to episode 267 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and my good pal Sean Orford. You alright, Sean?
I am, and it's definitely 267.
Definitely.
Because I was thinking it was 268.
So. We had a bit of a powwow and a bit of a check.
Yeah, it's definitely 267.
It's
okay.
267. Liveinthepresent.co.uk. Any new listeners out there, check out the website for all the show notes and links for this and all previous episodes are on there. There's a little search bar, I think. So basically any issue you've had in terms of mental health and self-development, if you stick that into the search bar, you'll find something that we've discussed or a blog post that Sean has written from over the years.
Which would change your life completely.
Pretty good resource, I think. And if you sign up to our mailing list, we'll send you weekly alerts for the show and you get a discount code for the book and free meditation files as well. All pretty good. We're talking about intolerance today. Sean sent me a text message late one night last week saying, we need to talk about intolerance.
Yeah.
So maybe we won't go into why. What prompted that text message?
The world!
Yeah. It doesn't take for long to figure out. There's quite a bit of that around, but how are you doing otherwise, Sean?
I'm okay. I'm aware of the fact that the world is becoming intolerant, but I'm having a good time. It was Robert's 30th birthday, so we had knees up. That was good.
I saw the photos. Looked like
that
a good
was
one.
Good. Yeah.
Happy birthday, Robert.
The weather was good, yeah.
Yeah, we've had a little bit of a blip after that 3-week blistering heat wave where it rained.
Yeah.
There was this weird, strange wet stuff falling from the sky.
Weird, wasn't it?
Very strange.
Where does that come from?
Yeah. But I think we're due for another nice little run now.
Yeah, they say it's going to be hot next week, up to 33 degrees in the south, I reckon.
Hosepipe ban on the way for the northwest.
That's us.
In
August.
Yeah.
So, to make sure that the jacuzzi is full of water before the hosepipe ban comes
in. Yeah, I'll be watching, I'll be looking over your fence.
Filling it with buckets.
Yeah, and the World Cup is over, which some people may be cheering, some people will be upset, but it was pretty good, I thought, in terms of bringing a little bit of joy to the nation for a few weeks. Everyone seemed in a pretty good
mood. I got involved in it, which is I'm not really into football at all, but I found myself, especially the Swiss team, they did make me quite cross. They weren't nice chaps on the pitch.
The Swiss?
Yeah, there was one particular chap that had bleachy blonde hair on the top.
Right,
He needed a good slap. He wasn't a nice chap at all.
You weren't very tolerant of his...
I wasn't very tolerant at all.
Intolerance on the pitch.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm missing it a little bit, really, because it was quite nice being able to flick the telly on and being football on all the time. But I won't watch much this season in terms of Premier League action, but I don't know, it was a good kind of festival of fun and... Brought people together for a while, eh?
Yeah,
I thought
it was good.
Which moves us nicely on to the show. You've done a blog post about tolerance, intolerance.
Yeah.
What you're thinking on this one? Where did this idea come
from? I'm thinking mainly. I'm looking at everything around me at the moment.
Not that you need to look far for signs of intolerance.
No.
At the moment.
But I mean, you've got to look what's happening yesterday with the whole kind of Brexit thing and what was going on in Parliament.
Yeah.
And the whole issues of tolerance and intolerance. You've got Trump going to Russia and all the things that he was saying about Russia and trying to be tolerant to them, and then afterwards he was coming away and saying, no, I'm intolerant to them.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a very confusing place to be.
Yeah.
But the things for me is that intolerance, ignorance, arrogance and prejudice all go together.
Right.
And whenever you hit one of them, you're hitting all of them.
Okay.
You know, to be intolerant of other people, you have to have a level of arrogance because you have to feel like you're better than them to be intolerant to them.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of stuff.
Yes, I mean, a couple of arch remainers like us on the Brexit debate. We'll try not to talk too much politics this week. It might be hard. Why are we so intolerant of the positives of Brexit? Is it because they don't exist, or are our judgments so clouded that we can't see them?
I guess that the tolerance is in the eye of the beholder, isn't it? So that we believe, you and I, that the best interests of Britain are to stay within the European community. That's my belief. So that the issue then is the things that we are tolerant or intolerant about our own beliefs. And are our beliefs factual, or are our beliefs emotional?
Mm-hmm.
And at most point, things that we think are facts break down.
Right.
Yeah, then they're not factual. You know, okay, gravity is factual. If you jump out of a plane, you hit the ground. You know, I mean, we know that.
Yeah.
But in terms of once we start to look at psychology and emotion, it's hard to find things that we can actually confirm as factual.
Yeah.
It's opinion. It's belief.
Yeah. I mean, the factual side of the Brexit debate was kind of controlled by the Remain side, and it didn't win because it was almost too factual and a bit too kind of... they didn't play on the emotional side, the kind of philosophical things that I like in terms of a community of nations coming together wasn't put across, whereas the Leave side was an emotional pull, wasn't it? It was the whole take back control thing.
But it was also like, let's create that intolerance of people that are stateless, looking for safety. They might want to come and be in our country.
Yeah.
So let's create some prejudice, and then that creates the arrogance. They're not good enough for us. You know, they bring disease, they bring illnesses, they bring crime. You know, they're all murderers, all that kind of stuff that we start to build up to create this intolerant feeling of them.
So intolerance was a good vote winner.
For
Trump as well, with the whole build the wall, like Mexican rapist type thing.
It's the negative bias, isn't it? It's easier to convince people of negativity than positivity.
So how do we work on that? What's the solution? The debate is still ongoing. We haven't left yet. It's actually looking less likely, I think, that we will, given the crazy amount of stuff that's going on. But still, you know, it's still likely, but less likely than it was.
I think that what we're looking at is...
Build the emotional case for...
We're looking at mindfulness. The whole issue about do we react to things or do we respond to things? And it's like most prejudices, if you look at them, if I say, you know, all Welsh people are thieves or all Scots people are mean, you know, which is like was a common concept back along.
Yeah.
You know, obviously that's untrue, isn't it?
Englishmen, Irishmen, Scotsman jokes.
Yeah, all the Irish people are thick. I mean, it's like all those kinds of things that come from an arrogant point of view to assume that about other groups of people. And if you go and check it out, then people aren't like that, are they? You know, in any group, any culture, any race, there's going to be the clever ones, there's going to be the ones that aren't so clever, there's going to be the nice ones, the nasty ones, you know, we're all in there, aren't we?
Yeah.
There may be some national characteristics in the sense that we know that people that live nearer the equator tend to be more emotional, people that go north tend to be more cognitive, and that's survival.
Yep.
And then we know all that stuff. But the idea of looking at one group of people and saying that they are less than us. Yeah?
Yep.
So one of the things for me at the moment, and it's to do with my resource and stuff like that, is I'm very aware, just observing things over the last few years, but also having some direct experience, we have the rise of what I see as female chauvinism. And it used to be that the province of men, you know, men were chauvinist pigs. And there actually are the right words here. A misogynist is a man who hates women, but a misandrist is a man-hating woman. Yeah. So when you get that denigration of, right? So the idea that women are beginning, big statement here, sorry, ladies, but there is a movement in the female world to readdress the balance where men were always dominant and put women down, where it's starting to swing the other way.
So we're both basically doing it to each other now.
Yeah.
instead of meeting in the middle.
Yeah, there's a quote here from Karen Salmanson, who wrote the thing that I'm using as a resource, but she's saying here that there are people that they're telling her that they believe that men can't or they're not emotionally evolved enough to want to grow, to communicate from their heart or empathize and validate the existence of the woman. And what they're effectively saying, as she quotes, is that men have become emotional bimbos, which is exactly what men used to say about women. Not that they were emotional bimbos, but they were cognitive bimbos. They were all stupid. You know, being stupid
not
and blunt.
Capable of running countries and big companies, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so now we've got this movement the other way.
Yeah.
Yeah. When we were talking about earlier on, you were telling me about the dads thing.
Yeah, yeah, I'll try and dig out a news clip I saw on Facebook in the last few days. Basically, there's a chunk of males, dads in particular, that have had enough of being seen as the idiot figure in TV shows and on, well, in life as well, in terms of, there was an advert they used to highlight it. I think it was an American Huggies nappies advert.
Right.
And they basically got the advert, you know, they were actors, but they had a load of, they said, let's put a load of kids alone with their dads for 2 days and watch them. The film, the short advert, was just like mayhem ensuing, like dads not being able to do nappies or like feed their kids. Basically saying that the dad was the idiot figure in the family.
It was the bimbo.
And without mum on the scene. And just all hell broke loose and complaints went out. And they actually redid the advert to completely change it so that it was still the dad in charge, but in a bit more of a mindful, positive kind of way.
Yeah.
It's fascinating, really, because it's kind of flipped. It's flipped the other way, hasn't it? In some ways.
Yeah.
I watch Peppa Pig with my little lads quite a bit. It's a great show, but the dad in Peppa Pig is an idiot.
Is he?
he's always mucking up. He's putting shelves up and they're falling down. Homer Simpson in The Simpsons, classic dad idiot all the time.
And Marge is the clever one.
Marge holds the family together.
Yeah.
All the time, man.
Yeah. And it's interesting, isn't it, is that a group of people, in this case women, who thought that it was bad to be put down by male figures as misogynists, can now embrace the idea of doing the reverse.
Yeah.
Yeah? And does that happen, if we look at the racial politics, you know, the idea that the white races in America dominated the black races... Mm-hmm. You know, so we had all the prejudice stuff that was going on. Is that reversing? Do we reverse that as well?
Right.
And when you start to look at how things try and balance, and very often the pendulum swings too far. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, these things take generations and decades to figure and sort out, don't they? There's never going to be an overnight fix for it. I mean, if in a topsy turvy world, if history had been slightly different. Maybe other parts of the world would have developed faster than the Northern Hemisphere, and it could have been white people that easily could have been taken advantage of, on a huge scale, and maybe we'd be fighting now for
power politics, I guess.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
If you think about, rather than thinking that people are intolerant or intolerant, I guess that some people are going to be more one way than the other. But we all have things that we are intolerant of.
Yeah.
Right? So, and if you know yourself mindfully, the more you know yourself, the more aware you become of your intolerances and why they're there. So I would own that I am very intolerant of people that are bullies. So like managers, in when I'm in the workplace settings, I will take on a manager who is a bully. And I know the reason that I do that. I'm very clear about that. When I was a kid, my dear old dad, who we haven't spoken about for a long time, was a bully.
Yep.
And I was bullied.
Mm-hmm.
And I was bullied by the family, because my sisters took on that role as well. So I was the butt. Yeah. And when I confront that as an adult, I think I'm not putting up with that like mm-hmm. I did as a child. So does that mean that when I go and confront a manager who's a bully, am I actually confronting my father? You know what I mean? Am I trying to resolve that bit inside me?
Yeah.
And if we look at our own intolerances, maybe for all of us, similar things are there. Like, why are we intolerant of what we're intolerant of?
Mm-hmm.
Rather than saying, I'm not an intolerant person. Of course you are. You know, it's what are you intolerant of?
What's your technique then for you see intolerance in the workplace and you take it on? Do you fight it with intolerance of that bully, or are you calm and measured when you take on these...
It depends on the person.
Oh, you haven't got them up against the wall by the neck.
Yeah, just give them a good punch. I think that the issue for me is getting the person to wake up to what they're doing. So rather than confronting someone head on, it's more a case of, do you realise when you do that, or when you say that, when you act like that, it has this effect? Is that what you want to have?
Mm-hmm.
And if you do want to have that effect, do you think there's something we need to do about that therapeutically? Because that's actually not healthy. It's not very good.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of thing. And there are times when a manager can be so closed... that I have actually shut a door and said to a manager, I know what you're doing, and if you don't stop doing it, I'm going to do something about it. I've had that kind of conversation. Mm-hmm. So it's had to be more kind of on the nose.
A bit more direct.
Yeah, but in general, it's a case of how do you get that person to become aware of what they're doing? That's the thing.
Okay.
So what are you intolerant of? I'm intolerant of bullies. What are you intolerant of?
I'm hyper aware, intolerant of people that try to bully me on my way to work when I'm trying to pedal furiously my 4.5 miles each morning. And my kind of cycling quest has made me it's been really eye opening. I'm super obsessed with it. But I've kind of come to the conclusion it's my first kind of real experience of being a minority, because I'm 2% of people, 2% of road users are cyclists, so basically maybe I'll see one other cyclist on my way to work, I'll give a little wave. So I'm a minority out there for 20 minutes in the morning and 20 minutes on the way home, and it's been quite eye-opening, really, for my kind of white privilege doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
So when drivers try and bully me to the side of the road or squeeze past when they shouldn't, I'm trying to exercise a bit of that white privilege and fight back. And you know, I've got cameras on my bike front and back now, so I've got potential evidence there, which I have used to kind of report to police on a very small number of cases. But yeah, I'm aware when the ones where I've reported them to the police, I'm kind of embarrassed by my reaction, because it's the only time I'm not an aggressive guy, but I can be quite aggressive, like in terms of my language on a bike, letting people know that I'm there. It's embarrassing seeing it back on camera, especially when I've got to send it to the police and I'm effing and blinding and sticking two fingers up to people that have nearly killed me. So it's quite interesting. I'm trying to temper that rage and that temper. It's the only time I ever get angry, really.
So the bit that interests me, that I asked you before, is cycling to work actually making you more stressed than not? It's supposed to be making you kind of healthy, fit and chill.
Yeah, I think there was a point when I was getting a bit too uptight about how much space I was being given on the road, that kind of thing. That was a few months ago. I'm a bit cooler about it now, a bit calmer. But I mean, for years I was riding to work and not really noticing at all that maybe I was being taken advantage of and not looked after too well by my fellow road users. It's just since I've been getting a bit more involved in cycling, like campaigning, I've become hyper aware to stuff. So it's a constant learning journey and battle. But is it ever okay to kind of use intolerance against intolerance? I'm thinking now in terms of, you know, Nazi Germany in the 30s and when World War II had to at some point break out. At some point we had to take this step and say, right, enough is enough. It's time to get serious and start, killing people. Yeah, ultimately, isn't it?
Yeah.
There comes a point where intolerance reaches that point where you've got to kind of say, right, enough is enough.
To me, I'm quite clear in myself that if there was another Nazi, Hitler-type situation in the world, I wouldn't want to fight, but I would be prepared to go and fight for the overall freedom of people.
Yeah.
And like I said, I wouldn't want to do it, but I would do it, because I think there is a point where you do have to stand up against bad behaviour, whatever it is.
Yeah. But is the key maybe to do it with a clear mind and a level of calmness? Because I'm conscious there's an article I'm going to link to, which kind of uses the analogy of an almost boiled kettle in terms of how easy it is to reach boiling point and bubble over. In an argument, you can think some people are just ready all the time to kind of go, aren't they, and argue with people.
But that's because they're near the boiling point.
Because they're near boiling point. Whereas if your temperature is lower, it takes more energy to reach that point, and you're calmer and you can react to situations a bit more clearly.
Well, respond rather than react. That's the trick. Yeah.
Okay.
And the thing is, I say it every time, put me back to it again, it's mindfulness. When you exercise mindfulness, you're responsive rather than reactive. When you exercise mindfulness, you can observe what you're thinking, what you're feeling, and what you're doing, and have some awareness of it, rather than just being at that illogical boiling point where you can't actually stop it.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things, again, which is a tough thing to address, but it's something that is very real, is that as we age and we go through different stages, we get different levels of tolerance because of the hormone changes that are going on inside us. So that anyone that's had an adolescent child to deal with or has been an adolescent themselves will know that as they go through that phase, that their tolerance, their fuse will be much shorter.
Yeah? Okay.
And then the same thing happens as we go through life. Some women have premenstrual, postmenstrual tension that can have that effect. Certainly menopausal stuff has that effect.
Yep.
But also men go through the same thing as well. There is what's known as the male menopause. But overall, as people get older, their tolerance tends to get less. And partly that's because people have the feeling of, well, I've done it and I know it. You know, so there can be a bit of arrogance in that.
Yeah.
Rather than listening to younger people, it's like, I know because I'm older,
yeah,
kind of stuff. So then you get the intolerance coming out.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, generally, as people get older, this charts show that we kind of lean a bit more to the right politically as well.
Mm.
You know, more conservative voters, that kind of thing.
It's interesting. Yeah.
So is that? Do you think that's partly down to that level of intolerance?
But very often conservatism is seen as conserving the status quo.
Right.
And people are intolerant of change.
Yeah.
People don't like change because change can be stressful. Therefore, to maintain the order, the status quo as it is now, then I know that. I haven't got to deal with change. Whereas if it changes, whereas when you're younger, change is exciting. It's different.
Yeah.
You know, stimulating.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I get that. And I guess that's a problem because we have an ageing population. If there's going to be more and more older people, does that mean we're going to have that lurch towards that conservative, fixed way of thinking rather than having the innovative, new...
Yeah, well, you can see it. It's there in our politics right now, isn't it? That there's that kind of... the two worlds are crashing and colliding, aren't they? Because we are... It's fantastic that we're all living longer and older, but the world at the same time is changing faster and faster, isn't it? We're kind of on this unstoppable conveyor belt, which is hurtling us towards amazing technological advances, but people aren't quite ready for the pace of change.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know, we all need just to take a deep breath, it feels like, doesn't it? And just kind of exhale, do some breathing exercises.
And just be here now.
Yeah, observe the river passing by and all that stuff.
Yeah. And actually be able to be in the present and observe what's going on rather than just reacting to it and kicking off.
Yeah.
You know, so important. Mm. When we look at the idea of, I'm pointing out this kind of rise of female chauvinism, which it becomes more apparent, but we also have the rise of the chauvinistic or nationalistic supremacist ideas, whether it is people in America that are becoming more politicised, or whether it's in our own country where there's going to be probably more conflict between Islam and the rest of the world. I wouldn't even say Islam and Christianity. I'd say Islam and the secular West.
Yeah.
You know, and that all those things are about prejudice, and they are about tolerance and intolerance on both sides.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the arrogance that comes with that, you know, we know best, whoever we are.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've got a lot more of this to come. Maybe we've always had it, you know, but it's here very much for us to deal with.
Yeah, I was thinking about how we can teach our kids to be tolerant, but when I think about it, I think kids naturally are massively tolerant of all situations and people and things, aren't they? It's kind of as we grow up, it's almost as if we need to... Adults need to learn from children constantly how to be tolerant of situations.
I always remember taking my youngest to Alder Hey. He had six toes on one foot, and they had to take a toe off. So I don't know if they had to. It was decided they were going to take a toe off. And several times we'd go to the plastic surgery clinic, and there was a little girl in there who had a cranial deformity where her eyes were either side of her head, more like a fish. And what they were going to do was take the middle of her skull out and move her eye sockets around. It was quite. And she was a little girl who looked very, obviously not normal, but she was the kind of person you couldn't stop looking at because she was so extreme. and they would play together, and it was so obvious that he didn't have any kind of...
Yeah.
There were no inhibitions with him, with her. She was just a girl and then playing together.
Yeah.
You know.
Beautiful.
And that was lovely to see. Yeah.
Or is all the adults in the room...
Well, like, bloody
hell. Politely kind of looking out the corner of their eye.
Yeah. And I guess it's like that with kids generally. They are more accepting.
Yeah.
You know, when do we develop prejudice? It's when we start to identify our group and our group's different to your group.
Yeah.
Rather than being able to associate all humanity in one group.
I'm starting to see it now. Where my lads play out in front of our house, there's a big group of kids that get together every night. I have done for like 2 or 3 years since they've all been growing up. But I can start to see there's little factions starting to form now.
All right.
But like between the boys and the girls and the age groups, and there's a couple of slightly older kids and some younger ones that... It's just little things starting to happen, and it's quite tricky sometimes actually watching your children being left out of certain things and have to go and ask what's happening, why are you not playing together, that kind of thing. I think ultimately it's a healthy thing, because a lot of people that I know don't have kids, their kids don't play out every night with neighbours anymore. And I just see it as a really positive thing that my kids are learning all these
social skills,
all these mad little social skills,
negotiation.
Exactly. I think it's really helpful.
Yeah.
But it's tricky as a parent watching your kid being left out of certain things and trying to see what's happened. It's fascinating.
Yeah. No, I get that. Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah. So, do you want to summarise anything else you want to mention,
Well,
Sean?
I think that we are potentially moving towards greater levels of intolerance, and we need to be aware of that for ourselves, but also with the kids around us, you know, with your guys coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And again, mindfulness, developing mindful skills enables you to observe what other people are doing, but to observe what's going on inside you, and then to question. It's the curious mind, you know, why do I think that? Why do I feel that?
Yeah.
And actually taking some responsibility for what's going on, rather than just thinking that the things that are going through my mind are facts, because they're probably not.
Yeah.
They're things other people told me.
Cool.
You know.
Okay.
Yeah. And just because something's on Facebook, guys, it doesn't mean it's real.
Yeah, do your research.
Yeah.
Check those statistics.
Yeah.
What's your resource?
Well, my resource is it's the Psychology Today article, which I quoted from earlier on. But it's about, are you a female chauvinist? And it's looking at that whole switch that's
okay.
going on between male chauvinism and female chauvinism.
Cool. Mm. That's a hot topic.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. And mine is a book by Georges Monbiot, environmental writer that I've been following for a while, called Out of the Wreckage. And he's basically got some really cool ideas and suggestions and explanations as to how we can pull ourselves out of the wreckage of the current political mayhem. And Bill, actually, we've been quite optimistic about the future, the things we need to do to be happy and healthy.
One of the things that I came across when I was reading around things was this guy, Nicholas Chauvin, who was a soldier in the Napoleonic Wars. And
Was he the original chauvinist?
Yeah. That's where it comes from.
Wow.
What happened was he was quite badly damaged, and Napoleon gave him a pension, and because he was a bit knocked about by the war.
Yeah.
And he became such an extreme supporter of Napoleon that he was seen as the ultimate patriot, the person who was so committed to a point of view.
Wow.
That people started to use the word chauvinism to describe people that were like him, that were committed totally to a point of
wow.
view.
Wow.
So this one guy, Nicholas Chauvin, became the origins of chauvinism.
Wow, I wonder what he'd make of that, his kind of legacy.
Yeah, I think he lost his legs, so that's probably, he didn't have a legacy.
Okay, very good. Cool, all right, we'll be back next week for more. livingthepresent.co.uk for all the show notes and links, and Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, we're on there as well. So take a look if you can. And if you'd like us to discuss something in the future, future episode, do drop us an email via the website or social media, and we'll engineer it in there, won't we?
We will indeed.
We'll get it in there for 2-6.
We'll be very tolerant, whatever you say.
Always, always, yeah. Cool. All right, Sean, you have a good week.
Yeah, and you. Take care.
See ya.